The NBA Finals are heating up. Looking for hot takes on all the postseason action? The Old Man and the Three, presented by BMW, is the podcast to listen to for the ultimate finals coverage. Host and former NBA sharpshooter J.J. Redick not only has a plugged-in perspective on the action from his time in the league, but he's also announcing the games in real time for ESPN. J.J. has the ultimate insider point of view, and he's taking you along for the ride as he breaks down the best defensive schemes, dunks, and drives from each game. And speaking of incredible drives, there's no better place to tune into your new favorite podcast, The Old Man and the Three, than in a standard-setting BMW. Luxury meets power to create a wholly new driving experience. Push the limits this NBA season with the brand that set the ultimate standard, BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Good morning and welcome to the Hoosier Huddle Podcast. Today's episode of the Hoosier Huddle Podcast is brought to you by Sports Drink, your digital water cooler. Sports Drink is a newly created internet community that tries to find the intersection of sports and not sports. They're here to help us grow and to hate your favorite team. A rising tide lifts all boats, so go check them out online or on social media. Go to sportsdrink.org. Or open Instagram and type in @sportsdrink, spelled like sports drink, but without the vowels. All we ask you to do is close the door behind you. We're trying not to let the funk out. Well, TJ, we're getting closer to the college football season. We are now on our Big Ten East preview. It is our last conference preview before the season starts. We're also, as of recording, 24 days away from Indiana kicking off the season against Illinois at Memorial Stadium on September 2nd at 8 o'clock against Illinois. But let's get to the Big Ten East. This, you know, we were talking before the show, it seems like a one horse race with Ohio State. Yes, I know it's going to probably tick off some Michigan fans. Michigan had a really special year last year with some really special talent. I do think that they'll be really good again, but Ohio State, usually when they have a, quote, bad season, that ends up in a Rose Bowl title and things like that, and I think they went 11-2. They get that game at home, and they usually come back with a vengeance. They have the conference's best quarterback. They have the conference's best receiver, and they change things up on defense, and you just think they're going to come back with a vengeance. Michigan should also be really good, but I don't know if they could duplicate what they did last year. What's your initial take on the Big Ten East?
I think it's a division that – really a conference on the Big Ten as a whole – that I view there being a wider gap this season between Ohio State and the rest of the league than there is in any other conference. The top team in any other conference with the rest of that conference, I think the gap is wider with Ohio State and the rest of the Big Ten than it is any other team conference combination in the country. I don't know if Ohio State's going to be the best team in the country. I do think they will have the best offense in the country. And if their defense can elevate themselves a little bit over what they were a season ago, which they weren't great in 2021. New defensive coordinator, Jim Knowles, coming over from Oklahoma State. I do think that there's enough talent there to suggest that with some tweaks, they're going to be a little bit better. I do think that with their offense, if they can stay healthy at the quarterback position and with Jackson Smith and Jigbet receiver, I think that there is enough there for Ohio State to really feel good about their chances to challenge for a national title.
Yeah, I agree. The schedule sets up pretty well as well. You have Notre Dame to start the year, who's coming off a devastating Fiesta Bowl loss in Marcus Freeman's first game. But it's also a Notre Dame team who loses some talent on offense. It's an opener. It's at home. I believe it's under the lights. on Fox as well. And Ohio State is going to be ramped up for that one. Notre Dame's not going to stink this year, but I don't think that they're going to be a team that's in national title or college football playoff contention unless they shock the world and beat Ohio State. Outside of Notre Dame, you have Arkansas State and Toledo, which really shouldn't scare the Buckeyes. Your crossovers in the West are Wisconsin at home, at Northwestern, and Iowa at home. They avoid that trip to Iowa, which caught them up a couple years ago, or tripped them up a couple years ago. You do have to go to Penn State on October 29th. You have to go to Michigan State on October 8th. And then I think a tricky game, if that defense isn't fixed, is at Maryland on November 19th. It's a week before the Michigan game. You could lose your focus. And if you lose your focus on defense against Maryland's offense, it's going to be a long day. And we've seen Ohio State go in there before and give up 50 some odd points, but win. And you know that Maryland wants that game back. I believe that was in that might have been in 2016. That was a heck of a game there. But their schedules, Ohio State's schedule shakes out really well. They do have the most talented roster, you get Michigan at home. It's a revenge game, and Michigan's not – they're going to be real good, but they're not going to be as good as they were last year. Let's move down the line. Let's go to Michigan. They're coming off a college football playoff appearance. They're coming off their first Big Ten title since 2004 as well. They return starting quarterback Cade McNamara, but they still have a quarterback competition between him and J.J. McCarthy. They lose Hassan Haskins, but return Blake Corum, who's a speedier back, ran for over 900 yards last year. They do get Ronnie Bell back. He was a terrific receiver in 2020 for them, lost for most of last year with an ACL injury. Cornelius Johnson turned into that big play receiver last year in his absence. You get a lot of talent on offense back. Where Michigan, I think, is probably a step lower. It's still very, very good, but that was an elite defense last year, where I think that they're a step slower there is on the defense side of the ball. You lose, an all-time talent like Aiden Hutchinson and David Ojigbo at the defensive ends, and it's going to be a big deal, and that's going to be the difference between beating Ohio State and losing to Ohio State. What's your take on Michigan?
Well, three people, three starters lost from the defensive secondary: Brad Hawkins, Dax Hill, Vincent Gray, plus the two difference-making pass rushers, which really allowed their defense to play straight up. They did not have to really do any exotic schemes or blitzes to get to the quarterback. They were able to just line up Hutchinson and Ojabo and say, hey, we're going to beat your offensive linemen with these two guys and allow the rest of our defense to go make plays elsewhere. So also lost defensive coordinator Mike McDonald to the NFL. New coordinators on offense. Yep. I do like their offensive talent. I think Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards, both really good running backs. I think that's a good tandem. You mentioned Ronnie Bell. I think their receivers are good, not great. I don't view them at the same level, anywhere close to really what Ohio State has as far as playmakers on offense. They do get a big transfer. Offensive line was going to be kind of a concern, but a big transfer from Virginia. I can't pronounce the guy's name, but Oluwatomi or something to that extent. But he's a potential All-Big Ten center for Michigan. So that was a good addition through the portal. But, I think that they lost enough combined with I wasn't overly even if they brought everybody back, I don't think that they could have replicated everything that they did last year. I think Ohio State has the potential to be much better or a little bit better than they were a season ago. Michigan takes a step back. Therefore, I think they're a clear number two in the Big Ten East. Potential top 10 team. I think that that's fair, that they could be a top 10 team. You look at their non-conference schedule, very manageable. They should go 3-0 without a problem at all.
Super duper soft.
Yeah, Colorado State, Hawaii, UConn, all at home. They also open the Big Ten at home against Maryland. So they don't go on the road until October 1st when they go to Iowa. That'll be a tricky game. They're at Iowa, at Indiana. They are home to Penn State and home to Michigan State. So that's a big deal there. Another reason why I think they are the clear second in this division, ahead of Penn State, ahead of Michigan State. I think they're a little bit better roster-wise, but the key for me in picking that, they get both the Nittany Lions and the Spartans at home. Their other two cross-division games outside of Iowa, Nebraska and Illinois, also both at home. So I think it is very feasible to say, hey, Michigan could be unbeaten with only one really impressive victory. If they blow out Penn State, blow out Michigan State, that's one thing. But let's say that those are just routine wins for them. The only impressive resume win might be at Iowa, to be determined how good Iowa will be. But they could go into that season finale at Ohio State unbeaten. And if that's the case, and they go to Ohio State and contend, but lose, so finish the season 11-1 without really any standout victories, but the only loss being to Ohio State on the road, is Michigan a contender for the playoff with an 11-1 record and that resume? It would depend a lot on what the teams around them do, but that would be tough to include them in there because who would they have beaten? What would they have done that would tell you, yeah, they deserve to be in there? I think that could play out to be a very interesting kind of test case scenario with this 4-team playoff.
Yeah, especially with the Big 12 and the Pac 12, whatever we're right. calling them now, they don't have a clear contender. We talked right. about that on our conference previews for them. You know, we projected the Big 12 having their champion having two or three losses at least, and maybe the Pac 12 in that same situation there. So it'll be interesting. And Cincinnati will be good this year, but they lose a heck of a lot of talent. And, you know, if they're not getting in with one loss, and they have to go to Arkansas to open the season. And I don't know, even if Cincinnati goes undefeated, I don't know if they make it 2 years in a row, unless there's no other choice. You know, if it is a 3-loss Big 12 team and a 3-loss Pac 12 team, maybe you do see, you know, a 1-loss non-champion in Michigan. You know, a 2-loss conference champion from another conference. But we'll see. It's going to be interesting. Michigan's non-conference schedule is – I point to it as, why can't IU do this with Colorado State, Hawaii, and Connecticut all at home? It's like, why can't IU do that? But we'll see. Let's move on to Penn State. This is a team I'm not sold on. It's, you know, they got off to that hot start last year. You know, they were 5-0, ranked number ranked number four in the country going to Iowa. They lose a close game, and then the wheels kind of fell off. They lose to Illinois the next week at home. They get beat by 9 at Ohio State. They hang on to beat Maryland 31-14. And then, you know, they lose to Michigan at home by 4 in a good game. They beat Rutgers, and then they lose to Michigan State to end the year, and lose in the Outback Bowl to Arkansas. So a promising 5-0 start turns into a 7-6 finish. And it seems like this is a theme for James Franklin a little bit. He started 0-5 in 2020, finished 4-5, which is kind of the opposite of what he did in 2021. But they're still 11-11 in their last 22 games over the last two seasons. It's very disappointing if you're a Penn State fan coming off of, you know, an 11-win season in 2019, a 9-win season in 2018, in which you lost to Kentucky in a bowl game again, and then an 11-win 2017 campaign where you did beat Washington in the Fiesta Bowl. You thought that James Franklin, Penn State, turned the corner, that they could, you know, once again become Big Ten champions, maybe make a run to the college football playoff. That hasn't happened. They haven't beaten Ohio State. A lot of those Ohio State losses are close, but they're games that Penn State probably should have won and ended up losing. So I'm interested to see where Penn State goes. I don't know what they're going to be. Sean Clifford is back at quarterback, but they have really no depth behind him. And I think another thing, TJ, is that former Penn State quarterback Will Levis is lighting it up at he's at Kentucky, I believe, at Kentucky, and that's got to be frustrating for fans because you have an inconsistent offensive player like Sean Clifford, and then you have Will Levis, who left the program, who, if he has a great year, is talked about being a first-round draft pick and maybe a sleeper at the Heisman trophy position. The first game of the year for them is at Purdue. I think this game sets the tone for the rest of the season for both programs. We talked about it last week in our Big Ten West preview. If whoever wins that game, I think, has the better season. You know, it's a real tough game. You saw what happened when they lost to IU on the road in 2020. Things just, the wheels fell off. Penn State also has a trip down to Auburn 2 weeks after that in non-conference. Outside of that, they play Ohio and Central Michigan. Your Western crossovers are Northwestern at home, Minnesota at home, and at Purdue. So it's not a terrible crossover, but they got to get that Purdue game. I think fans were really hoping that he would take that USC job and didn't, and then they gave him a huge contract extension. I'm just not a James Franklin fan. I think he's a terrific recruiter, but in-game coaching, I don't think he's very good, and I think he's holding them back in that regard. But what's your take on the 2022 Nittany Lions?
I think that Sean Clifford is proving to be a very frustrating kind of a tease, if you will. He definitely shows something to you that makes you believe that Penn State's about to be able to make a jump up, but it's not consistent. It every year, I feel like for the past 3 seasons, we've gone into the season previewing Penn State saying, well, you know, once Sean Clifford takes that next step, and it hasn't really happened. I don't think that their offensive weapons around him are great. I think Parker Washington is a very good receiver. I don't love the rest of that group. Now that they could step up. They've recruited decently at that position, so they could step up. One spot that I think I'm surprised that Penn State does not have a great player there is tight end. They've not been able to replace Pat Freiermuth. And there's not really anybody on the roster that jumps out at you as a player that is going to replace him. They think that, you know, reading some early reports from camp, they think that Nick Singleton, who is a true freshman at running back, they think that he's going to play early and really stand out. So if that's the case, maybe that's an additional difference maker on offense. I mean, they only averaged 25 points a game last season, which for an elite, a team hoping to be elite, that's not good enough. They do have to replace a couple of starting linebackers, Brandon Smith and Ellis Brooks, three starting defensive linemen. So I think that there's enough concern here to really wonder if Penn State can punch with Michigan, punch with Ohio State, and stand out as even the third best team in this division. You're right. That game at Purdue, first night, big night of the season, Thursday, September 1st. It's on network television on Fox. It's a night game at Purdue. That's going to be really tough for Penn State to win that, but they could. If they do, I think that that's a major boost for them. They get that one, then host Ohio, so they'd be 2-0 going to Auburn, which is a 3:30 CBS game. So two out of the first 3 weeks, those are kind of, you know, highlight games. It's national TV for Purdue, where very few other things are happening that night, so could be a big number there. And then at Auburn on CBS on the third week of the season, Auburn is a team that I think is there for the taking. It's a good year to be playing them because that could be a scalp in name, but not necessarily a great team on the field. And then you got Central Michigan and Northwestern. So the opportunity's there to win a couple of tough games, but winnable games, and get to 5-0 before your bye week. The opportunity's also there to lose a couple of those and really be reeling. So it's a really interesting start of the season for Penn State. I'm not sold on them either. I do think that they are fourth for me in the East, because I just have more faith in what I've seen from Mel Tucker's Michigan State teams than I do recently from James Franklin and Penn State.
Yeah, Penn State, that it doesn't, that team just looks like an 8-4, you know, 7-5 team to me. And it's all going to hinge on, I think, Penn State. I think they might be a psychologically weak team. But that Purdue game was, if another fun fact about this game. This game was traded to Fox from ESPN for Joe Buck.
Yeah.
So I wonder if they'll mention that on the broadcast, but we'll see. Let's move on to Michigan State. This is a team that overachieved last year thanks to the transfer portal. That's not saying that they weren't good. They were very good. But nobody could have expected an 11-2 season with a Cotton Bowl or a Peach Bowl win over Pitt. Peyton Thorne, their quarterback, matured and had a great season. But how much of this turnaround was due to Kenneth Walker coming in from Wake Forest and running for 1,600 yards and being in the Heisman conversation, winning the Doak Walker as the best running back in college football? You know, their offense still, or their defense wasn't great last year. This wasn't your typical Michigan State beat them back and win the game, you know, 9-6. This was, you know, we're going to hand the ball off to Kenneth Walker. He's going to run for 200 yards and 5 touchdowns, and Peyton Thorne's not going to turn the ball over. If you look at their defense, I think they were last in the Big Ten in pass defense and things like that. So they open with Western Michigan. They get Akron at home. They have to go to Washington, which is a tricky game. Their crossovers are Minnesota at home, Wisconsin at home, and at Illinois. Not the easiest crossovers, but not the worst. Your only road game is at Illinois. They do have to go to Michigan, but they get Ohio State at home, which that game seems to always put Michigan State back in their place. Last year, Michigan State went into Ohio State as a one-loss team, ranked seventh in the country, and they got smoked 56-7. No Kenneth Walker this year. He's moved on. They look at Jared Broussard to be the tailback there. Jaden Reed is back, but they lose Jalen Naylor at wide receiver. The defense, we'll see if the defense can be better in the pass game. But I don't know, just like Michigan, I don't know if Michigan State gets to that 10-win mark again, just because they so far outshot expectations. Maybe they come back down to earth a little bit, but we'll see. Where do you see Michigan State?
Fun game for them, week three at Washington as well. Kalen DeBoer and maybe Michael Penix starting at quarterback. We'll see, but that's going to be a fun one to watch. It is a 7:30, so a primetime game on ABC, I think. That is September 17th. So Michigan State, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how much of their success did hinge on Kenneth Walker, because you're right, the defense, pretty darn bad against the pass, and they brought in a transfer from Georgia, Amir Speed, that should start right away for them. How much does that help you? One transfer in the secondary, don't know. Michigan State's continued to recruit really well. That's going to start paying off dividends soon on the field. Maybe this year, but they definitely need some help on that defense in the secondary. Plus, they could definitely use with some difference-making pass rushers, which everybody's looking to find, but Michigan State needs that to help out that secondary. They need to get additional pressure on the quarterback to help out a weaky secondary. So I think that they're a interesting team. The downside for them on their schedule, I kind of take the Ohio State home game off the table. I don't view anybody in this conference beating Ohio State this year. So you're looking at, okay, who's their next kind of matchup opponents? It's at Michigan, and then they close the season at Penn State. So, you know, if you're looking at who's that battle for second in the Big Ten East, both of those other contenders, they have to play on the road. So that's a plus they're at Maryland as well. So not the easiest draw for them. I have been pretty impressed so far with kind of how Mel Tucker's been able to sort of rebuild this program after a couple of lean years under D'Antonio at the end of his reign. We'll see if they can kind of take that next step, which is to consistently reach that 9-10 win plateau. I don't view them quite at that level this year, and I think it will be a lot dependent on, can their defense improve enough, and can Peyton Thorne do more than just not lose the game? We'll see. I think that they will need that from him this year. They'll need him to be much more of somebody that they rely on for offense as opposed to, hey, don't screw this up. He looked good at times last season, but, you know, it's going to be a different role for him unless that running game is significantly better than what we anticipate it to be. And they don't miss a beat after losing Walker. They just plug a few guys in and keep on rolling. I don't think that's going to happen, though. I think they will need Peyton Thorne to really take a next step and show that he can be more than just a game manager, if you will.
Yeah, I agree. Let's move on to Maryland. This team, is really interesting to me. I do think they probably have, outside of Ohio State, the best wide receiver group in the conference. If they stay healthy, Rakeem Jarrett, Jayshon Jones, and Dante Demas. If Demas is healthy, he's one of the best wide receivers in the conference. They did go 7-6 last year. They won a bowl game. Their defense is what held them back. You know, as bad as IU's offense was late in the year last year, they led up 35 points to a Donovan McCulley-led offense. They did win 38-35, but it was kind of piecemealing to get together a win. They started off 4-0. They lost. They beat their matchup opponents. It's kind of IU's recipe to go into a bowl game this year. However, when they played anybody good, they got throttled. They lost 51-14 to Iowa at home, 66-17 at Ohio State, 34-16 at Minnesota, 31-14 Penn State, 40-21 against Michigan State, 59-18 against Michigan. They did win the Pinstripe Bowl against Virginia Tech, 54-10. They have Talia Tungavaloa coming back. They also hit the transfer portal hard, especially on defense. But you lose some secondary players who have been there for a while, who are going to the next level. Nick Cross, guys like that. Maryland, they're going to put up points this year. It's can they stop anybody long enough to outscore them? They play Buffalo at Charlotte and SMU in the non-conference. They get Purdue at home, Northwestern at home, and at Wisconsin. So a very good draw out of the West for them. You get your matchup games at home. The Purdue-Maryland game, if the over is out, I'm taking the over today. They do have to go to Michigan and to Penn State and to Wisconsin. That's going to be tough. I think health-wise, if they're healthy, I think they get back to a bowl game again. You know, they play Indiana October 15th. It's on the road. This series has become kind of a mini rivalry between yep. IU and Maryland. The games have been close. They've usually determined which program goes to the postseason and things like that. So it's a very important game for IU. It's strength against strength as long as everybody's healthy. You know, the IU secondary was not healthy last year. We saw Tywin Mullen try and come back. He couldn't move. And got burned a couple times. But, you know, with a healthy secondary, it's IU's strength. So we'll see. It's a big game. That's a matchup opponent for IU. Does Maryland take that next step? Do they start competing with some of the big boys and get to a better bowl game? Or is this, you know, kind of the Kevin Wilson formula of we're just going to outscore you, and if you score on us, you know, just give us the ball back and we'll go and score again and hopefully win?
You know, that last point you made was exactly what I was going to say. Is Maryland, their current iteration has to remind everyone of kind of the mid Kevin Wilson teams before Tom Allen. It reminds you of kind of the Brian Knorr defensive coordinator era Indiana teams, where it was, man, we've got a great offense, but we're going to struggle to get to six or seven wins. And the reason is that their defense gave up almost 40 points a game and more than 6 yards of play. They were bad against the run, bad against the pass. They get back seven starters, but lost a couple of their best players. One of them, Nick Cross, I heard Mike Loxley on Indianapolis radio call Nick Cross their best player. And if you're losing your best player from a really bad defense and not bringing in anybody that jumps off the page as a difference maker, I'm not sure how much different the results will be. New defensive coordinator in Brian Williams, no clue what he brings to the table, but offensively, you're right, great receivers. Tagovailoa, very good quarterback, somewhat turnover prone, but as much as they ask him to do, I think he does a pretty nice job. They do get back all five of their offensive line starters, and they've got a freshman running back, Ramon Brown, that they think could be their starter. So I think that they're going to be a really entertaining team. I'm not sure how overall successful it's going to be. I do think that the ceiling for them is kind of right around that 6-7 wins. Their West matchups, Purdue at home, Northwestern at home, at Wisconsin, not bad. I mean, you do get that Purdue game at home. That's a very interesting game, but it comes off of the heels of at Michigan and Michigan State. They might be a little bit beat up before they take on the Boilers. I don't know. I really don't see them having the defensive chops to be able to punch up there and maybe take Penn State's place in the pecking order for this season. I don't see it. I think that they will give teams some fits because of their offense, but ultimately fall in kind of high-scoring shootouts in a number of these games and fall somewhere between 5 and 7 wins again.
Yeah, it's tough, especially when you're at one of these programs like Indiana, at like Maryland, where you have one unit that is really, really great, and then your other unit just is below average. And, you know, it's an anchor, and it kind of feels like a missed opportunity, especially under the Kevin Wilson years. 2013, you look at, was it that offense was probably the best in the Big Ten, and they go 5-7. And a large part of that was due to idiotic scheduling by Fred Glass and the administration. You're scheduling Missouri at home and Navy, which you should never schedule. And then, you know, you had everybody touts Kevin Wilson as this great play caller. You're running the ball down Minnesota's throats and you throw a backwards pass and the game's over. You know, hand the ball off a couple of times, kick a field goal to win the game, and maybe you're in a bowl game in 2013. You know, it stinks because those, you know, these players for Maryland, those players for IU, they're actually really good. And you know, the way that college football is trending, and there's not much appreciation for those teams, you know, on the national perspective. And that's kind of taking the allure away from college football. And now it's a national championship or college football playoff or bust mentality. It's kind of an NFL mentality. And I don't like that. But let's move on. Next up is the Indiana Hoosiers. We'll talk quickly about them. We'll go into depth on IU the next 2 weeks. We'll talk about the offense and then the defense and special teams as we ramp up for the season. But a quick overview on IU, coming off a disastrous 2-10 season. Injuries played a huge role. This opener against Illinois is, I think, the most important game of the Tom Allen era to date. It might not be as much fanfare as the Ohio State opener to open his regular season debut as head coach. It doesn't have the pizzazz of a bowl game, but for the state of the program and for Tom Allen's future in Bloomington, it is the most important game. You get a win here, now you're kind of back on track. You got Idaho and Western Kentucky the next 2 weeks. before going to Cincinnati. So you could be 3-0 heading to Cincinnati. It is a front-loaded schedule, which I think should benefit IU in terms of if you could win some games early, you could win back some of these fans that kind of jumped off the ship last year. Your other non-conference games, so it's Idaho, Western Kentucky at Cincinnati, another stupid schedule. Why you're going to Cincinnati is beyond me. Your West crossovers are at Nebraska, Illinois at home, and Purdue at home. This is a year IU has to win their matchup games. You have to beat Maryland. You have to beat Rutgers. You have to beat Illinois. If you could get those three, and then the swing games of Cincinnati, Nebraska, Purdue. If you could get one of those, you're going to a bowl game. I don't think you have a shot at Ohio State. I don't think you have a shot against Michigan, really. We'll see what Penn State is. I think if the cards fall the right way for IU and the cards fall the wrong way for Penn State, that's a game that I could see IU pulling an upset. But you have a new quarterback, either Jack Tuttle or Connor Bazelak. You have new running back. And Sean Shivers and Josh Sanderson behind him. New wide receivers at with Emory Simmons, Cam Camper. You have DJ Matthews back. He only played four games last year, but he was a difference maker before his injury. I think the key is the offensive line. If the offensive line can improve and you expand that rotation and see if these younger players can play well, you've got a shot. The defense, I think, should be pretty good. We've been down to practice, twice in the last couple weeks. The defense, if they stay healthy, I think should be pretty good and should be back more towards that 2020 level with Allen calling it. It looks like they'll go back to that vision zone which they played in 2020 and got all those takeaways. So we'll see if they can get those takeaways, help out the offense a little bit. They should be in decent shape. Could they also be a total disaster? Yeah, if they lose against Illinois, not writing the season off totally, but it doesn't help. You're probably looking at another 3-4 win year, and more people are going to start calling for Allen's job. So not to go too much into depth on IU, what's your take on IU, TJ?
I think that there's a ton of questions, a lot of potential answers, and I think it makes for a fascinating season coming up. I mean, complete change from what we saw a season ago on paper. So whether or not the results and the outcomes follow that, we will have to find out. But Indiana knew that changes were needed. So offensive coaching changes, personnel changes, I think a really big increase of speed and explosiveness on offense, along with, I think, intelligence additions on defense that combine with guys getting healthy, hopefully, and returning on defense, plus Tom Allen taking over play calling again on that side of the ball, along with Chad Wilt being brought in on that side as well, as kind of a grooming role as a defensive coordinator and currently a position coach. I think that what Indiana has to hope is that those changes, combined with what we've heard about player-led accountability and player-led fixing the culture and kind of reestablishing the foundation of which the culture is, or the program is built on as a culture, Indiana's got to hope that those take hold very quickly and that you get off to a fast start. The quarterback position We'll talk about that quite a bit, I'm sure, over the next few weeks. Definitely a current position battle between Jack Tuttle and Connor Bazelak. And it's a new offensive system, so it's hard for us to even say what it is that they're looking for exactly from that position. I think that there's so many questions, a lot of potential answers. It's a very difficult team to get a read on. I will say this. I am going to be optimistic about a Tom Allen-led defense until proven otherwise. And on offense, I would say cautiously optimistic that there's been enough additions and changes for them to be at least improved. Whether or not it's going to be good enough, I think is certainly a point of conversation and debate. But I do think that there has been enough addition and changes and playmakers added to the offense, plus a new system, that I think you can make a very good argument that the offense will be better. That's a very low bar, and even just a little better is not going to be good enough. But I do think that there's reasons to be cautiously optimistic about a slightly more entertaining version of the offense than what we've seen the past, saw last year. So we'll definitely dive in position by position, and we plan on having our favorite and fan favorite, Andy Graham, back on to help us preview things. We are looking forward to that, but I guess we'll jump to the last team in the East, which is Rutgers. Another matchup opponent for Indiana, for sure. It's a team that struggled on offense just as much as IU did, only 13.7 points per game in Big Ten play. Still major questions at quarterback, Noah Vedral. They do like the redshirt freshman Gavin Wimsett, but those two are competing. You lose Isaiah Pacheco. You lose your best receiver, Bo Melton. You only get back two starters along the offensive line. All that being said, it seems like the national take is, oh, look at Rutgers. They are really on the right path. With Indiana, you look at it as, oh, what a complete dumpster fire disaster. I find the national narrative's takes on the two programs to be quite different, and I'm not entirely sure why. Rutgers was terrible against the run last year on defense. They were actually last in defensive pass efficiency. They only get back five defensive starters. I know they're recruiting okay, but I guess I don't really see what kind of the national buzz on Rutgers being this big improvement. I guess I don't see where it's coming from.
Well, Phil Steele has them last in the Big Ten East, if that makes you feel a little bit better, TJ.
And it's not universal. I've just seen quite a few national people, putting Rutgers like sixth or fifth. So it's not like people are predicting, oh, they're going to win eight games. No. But I do think that the narrative around them is, look how much better they're getting. Look how much they're improving. And that just hasn't been the case. Yeah, they beat the crap out of IU last year when Indiana was just a complete shell of itself. And to be honest,
we probably like could have beat Indiana last year.
Yeah, it didn't look like they were at all interested in playing that game. That was a major disappointment for sure, and a clear sign of the struggles of, how much that team had just kind of thrown in the towel at that point.
The team, the coaches. We would be in the press box, and you see guys like Grant Hurd, just whatever, in his hoodie with his hands in his pocket, and just like disinterested in coaching his guys. And, people say, going back to IU for a second, people say, well, they lost so many coaches. these coaches quit on IU. It looked like. So I think the national perspective.
No. Yeah. Am I wrong? Like, doesn't it seem that Rutgers has this kind of narrative around it that, hey, Schiano's making them a lot better and they're really improving? And I think that there's an argument to be made for that. I mean, they're recruiting pretty well. I think that they have gotten better than they were under Coach Flood. No doubt about that. But still, I mean, it was a bad offense last year. Again, less than two touchdowns per game in the Big Ten, which includes their beatdown of IU, and a defense that was almost last against the run and dead last against the pass and pass efficiency defense. Plus, losing their best players on offense, Pacheco and Melton, all but two starters on the offensive line, and returning only five starters on defense, I guess I don't see where the positive spin is coming from when looking at what Rutgers is faced with. You look at their schedule, at Boston College, that's a very tough opener. Wagner, and then at Temple, weird game to be playing at Temple. They host
45 minutes away.
Nebraska, and they're at Minnesota. I mean, they're at Maryland. They do get to host Indiana. So if you're kind of picking between IU and Rutgers for last in the division, from a national perspective, you say, well, Rutgers gets to host IU at home. Okay. But I think you could definitely make the argument that their West crossovers are tougher than IU's overall. I don't really, I guess I just don't see it. Like, what's this big difference that makes Rutgers this positive story, whereas Indiana is kind of widely disregarded as we'll pencil them in last and move on.
I'll take the other side of that argument, but... TJ. You know, it's IU came from 8-5, 6-2, all the way down to 2-10. Rutgers went from 1-11. 2-10, 3-6, 5-8. So, you know, it's a lazy take saying, hey, they'll just jump up. The next step is 6-6. They did back into a bowl game last year, but good on them for going on short notice. I do think that they're improved. I think that Schiano is recruiting the state of New Jersey. Gets hyped up by national media too. New Jersey is a fertile recruiting ground, and he's trying to close those state borders from all these other teams coming in and poaching guys. But they got to show it on the field. I think, you know, it's a lazy take of it's 6-7 in the Big Ten East. Who cares? IU's on their way down. Rutgers is on their way up, and they're going to pass each other somewhere in the middle. And without looking into it, plus Indiana football has such a negative, just a negative aura about them from their history that, you know, not only does the IU fan base play into it, but the local and national writers, buy into it as well. So I think that's why the Rutgers narrative is, hey, we're in New Jersey. They're starting to recruit New Jersey kids better. They've gone from one win to two wins to three wins to five wins. And the logical next step is getting to six wins and getting to another bowl game and things like that. Do I think that Rutgers is – they like I'm watching rewatching last season. I know I've got problems. But it's just they weren't impressive. They beat Syracuse. It's like okay, it's Rutgers. And I don't know if people in the Midwest had no Rutgers football history. It's not great either. I mean, Schiano turned that team around and into a perennial bowl team. It was like a miracle, and things like that. But. Maybe that's the angle that people take. I think it's a lazy take. and things like that. And they'll hammer, you know, the LEO thing as cutesy and things like that. Well, Greg Schiano, a big bad Greg Schiano's thing is family, is forget about me, I love you. It's the exact same thing as Tom Allen's doing, just a different acronym. So, you know, I get it as an IU fan. It's also frustrating. Like, why, like you said, why are you giving Rutgers so much credit and taking away the credit from IU? IU fans do that to themselves enough of, hey, we didn't beat anybody with a winning record. Or, hey, you know, that 8-4 season doesn't count. Or the 6-2 season doesn't count because it happened during COVID. So what? It's kind of head scratching, and I agree with you. But we'll see what happens with Rutgers. They do. I that Boston College game could put them in their place. It could also jumpstart their season. But you know, when they play the big boys of the East, they usually get smoked. Like smoked. The 13 points last year was the most they scored against Michigan since they came in, I believe. They always let up over 50 points to Ohio State and things like that. So I don't know. It's a game. It's a matchup game IU needs to win, and it's on the road. It's early enough to where you hope that, you know, injuries aren't a thing for IU. And you know what? IU deserves to after last year's performance against Rutgers, they need to say, hey, that wasn't us. That was a shell or ghost that we've taken care of, because last year's Rutgers game was probably, outside of the 83-20 game against Wisconsin in 2010, the most painful IU game I've watched.
Yeah, it was not remotely enjoyable, and it definitely made you question everything you thought you knew about where the program was going.
Yep.
Which we've continued to question throughout the offseason, and will continue to wonder until we see something, we hope, much different this coming season, which is creeping in on us. Can't get here quick enough.
Yeah, well, as the final day of my summer break, yeah, now it can't get here quick enough. 2 weeks ago, yeah. I would have said slow down. But final day of summer break, unless this day is going to last forever, we could. All right, let's get things going. That does it for our Big Ten East. We're going to Ohio State, the Big Ten East champion. Ohio State, yeah. Big Ten champion.
Yeah.
What's your one non-IU road trip in the East?
Ohio State versus Michigan. I have not been to that particular game in person, and it appears to always live up to the considerable hype, at least from an atmosphere standpoint. So definitely that's going to be my go-to there. I do think that there's some other fun places to go. I don't really have any interest in going to a Maryland game or a Rutgers game. No offense to those individuals, schools. I'm sure that they would say the same about IU games, and I get that. But I think the only other one that would come close for me would be a Penn State wideout game. But I will choose Ohio State, Michigan. This year, of course, hosted in Columbus.
Yeah, that would be my pick too. If I had to go something different than you, it would be Michigan State, Michigan. That's just another rivalry that Michigan State's won the last two. Michigan wants revenge. Ann Arbor's fun. I've liked my trips to Michigan State a little bit better. I think that I like their stadium a little bit better. I don't know. But that Ann Arbor in whenever that game is always, it's always fantastic. That crowd for that game is going to be fired up to win. But yeah, it's Ohio State, Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan at the Horseshoe would be my number one pick. If you wanted to go to the Penn State Whiteout game, it is the Minnesota game this year, I believe, and it's for the governor's bill. So it's not the most exciting Whiteout game like it was for Auburn or Ohio State a couple years ago. Then Penn State hosts Ohio State this year in the Stripeout game. Went to the Stripeout game last year at Penn State for IU. It was pretty cool, but been there, done that. So it's got to be Ohio State, Michigan. All right, that does it for this edition of the Hoosier Huddle podcast. That does it also for our preseason conference previews. TJ, we've made it through. The next Yay. Step is position by position IU previews. We've gotten updates from practice. We'll keep people updated on the site as well as our countdown to kickoff. We have position previews coming out. We have game previews coming out. In our first glance, and before you know it, it will be game week. Again, the game is at 8 p.m. on Friday, September 2nd in Bloomington against Illinois. Follow us on Twitter at Hoosier_Huddle. Follow us on YouTube as well. Just search Hoosier Huddle. Subscribe, like, and rate as well. You can follow the podcast on any platform where you get your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all that. Subscribe, rate, and review as well. Anyway, thanks for joining us, TJ. We're finally through the meat of the, we'll call it talking season. We'll be back next week with Andy Graham to talk the IU offense.
Absolutely. Thanks, everybody. Have a great week.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, We think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.